Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
You're in a situation where, cut a very long story short, I basically volunteered for the best part of a year and a bit because I could see the opportunity, but I understood that it was going to be difficult. What had to happen was the people I was working with had to make their breakthrough, and I had to meet other people along the way who were, if you like, more important than them, who would then be able to financially afford me.
Hi, welcome to Blacktaculate, a podcast series featuring UK young black professionals, where we find out how they do what they do, so you can too. Or not. After all, it is your life.
Welcome to another episode of Blacktaculate. For those of you who don't know what Blacktaculate is, I'm a little bit vexed. I ain't gonna lie, where you been? Popping off, aren't we, Wills?
Almost definitely.
We're getting there.
Most definitely.
For those of you who've just stumbled upon this, this is all about featuring young UK black professionals, where we try to find out exactly how they do what they do, so you can too. So we look at resources, tools, tips, frameworks, you know, things that are just helping them in their daily professional lives. And I'm going to put a caveat on this one, a disclaimer. Speaking to one of my boys here, so it might get a little bit dumb. But if it gets dumb, it's not my fault because he's just that guy. He really is just that guy. So, Martin Wilson.
That's the name.
Please tell my bosses, my listeners, who you are, what you do, and then, you know, we just roll from there.
Okay, cool. I am Martin Wilson, as you said. I am a consultant osteopath who works in sport mainly. So, different areas of sport from athletics to boxing, football, rugby, American football, and baseball.
Let's start from scratch.
Okay.
Your background, like, let's talk about upbringing.
Because
it's not necessarily a typical path, with all due respect. Osteopath.
Like, no.
What is an osteopath? Let's define that.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of people will probably be going, osteo what? Osteo. And they'll go, oh, is that bones? And then I'll sort of go, not really, because I can't do anything to bones. That's GBH, if you if you start doing stuff like that. But so an osteopath. How to explain an osteopath without offending all my other medical peers and not downplaying what it is that we do. But it's a manual therapy, so it's similar to a chiropractor or a physiotherapist. I would argue that our diagnostic training is more extensive and longer. We actually are considered primary healthcare, so you can kind of walk off the street into an osteopath as your first port of call.
Primary healthcare?
Yeah, primary healthcare, because you have primary healthcare, secondary healthcare, and tertiary healthcare.
Okay.
So it's primary healthcare is like the first person you meet, like your GP, people who you go to start with.
Right.
People who you're referred on to from there is normally secondary healthcare.
Right.
And then the people who you kind of see as a result of having seen a second person and they're dealt with, then is tertiary healthcare. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just the kind of the ways you get there, if you like.
So an osteopath is a primary healthcare.
Technically speaking, we walk off
the street.
Yeah, you should go there first.
Yeah,
obviously not for anything. If you've got like some seeping wound coming from your head, you don't fly to your osteopath.
Yeah. So if I was to distill what you're saying is, you predominantly would go to an osteopath, someone like yourself, is if you were suffering from some form of, I wouldn't say bone per se, but
musculoskeletal. So it's musculoskeletal is the basis of what we do. It's not all we do, but musculoskeletal. So anything from your toe to the top of your head that involves muscles, joints, ligaments, you probably go to see an osteopath. So musculoskeletal is our bread and butter. Having said that, I will say to everyone, go see an osteopath if you get the chance. If you have a problem, any issues, go see one, because you'll have a different view on how things work, and it is important. And a lot of people don't know about osteopathy, and then they think it's for this or that. But I think a lot of people could do with osteopathic treatment if they need it.
And they're quite expensive, no?
It depends, like anything. You know, how good that person is, how busy that person is, how well known that person is.
Yeah.
But you can go down to the British School of Osteopathy in Borough and go to one of their tutor-led clinics. And that is, as far as I'm concerned, pretty cheap, because you're getting treated by sort of last year students with the supervision of a tutor. And they're pretty good.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to try it for a reasonable price, that's where you go. I mean, I used to treat people there, and people, it's not like people don't get better. People go there and they get the results they want. So it's a good idea.
Are we done?
Yeah, that's about it. That's it. Hey, listen.
The way around, I just
I'm trying to educate. Do you know what I mean?
No, I'm trying
to educate.
No, I think you've given us a really good definition, and also a good advocate for the profession in of itself. You don't get many black
osteopaths, yeah.
So how? Like, how is that even an option? How did you know about osteopaths?
So I guess...
Join those dots for us.
I was young, and I was basically raised by 7 osteopaths as a small child.
This guy is an idiot.
I guess for me, so my upbringing, my background, I was fortunate enough to go to a nice grammar school in Kent called Cranbrook School.
Right, okay.
Boarding school, actually, as you know.
We're starting there, yeah?
Well, that's probably, if you want to know how I became an osteopath, that's kind of where it starts for me. Do you know what I mean? You know, I grew up in London. I was born in Tottenham. And then my mum being of Nigerian parents, so that's where I'm at. So you already know that basically I wasn't going to get anything less than 100% pressure about my education. So my mum used to travel a fair bit, and so she felt it'd be better if I was in a more stable environment in a boarding school. So,
yeah.
And off I went to Kent. Yeah, basically, obviously, black kid, I think one of 3, 4, maybe in the whole school. Yeah, in the whole school. So,
What's the school name drop?
Cranbrook School.
Hopefully the
Cranbrook School.
The portfolio is a little bit more diverse.
Listen, 100%. Oh, yeah, I could tell you some stories. It's funny, when I actually did a little tour for some parents. No, they got me to do the tour for Ofsted.
Right.
Which... I was old enough to understand why I was being picked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was one of those funny moments where you're like, that's weird, because I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah, I'm a decent student, but you know, this is a high-risk maneuver. Do you know what I mean? You know what I'm like. Do you know what I mean? So it's a high-risk maneuver. Then I was like, oh, I see. Of course. Look what we've done to this young black child. Look, you see? And he's here and he's prospering. And
he speaks so well.
Do you know what I mean? And look, so, you know, he's just like everybody else. He's practically one of us. Do you know what I mean? you laugh it off, don't you, at the time, but yeah, so that was it. So obviously I did the thing for us, and he was so impressed, like they started getting me to do tours for like all these parents, until one day I decided to turn up with I had like cane and stuff at the time, and I just took my hair out. I turned up like with an afro, having just played sport, and I think that was the end of my tours, because I looked like a mad person. And I was like, hey guys, like some sort of sideshow Bob, like let's go see the school. Do you know what I mean? But anyway, I digress. But yeah, basically through there, one of my friends, his father was an osteopath,
right?
And I always knew that I basically wanted to do something which involved working with people. I like a challenge, and people are the greatest challenge out there, in my opinion, because they're forever changing. No one's ever the same.
Yeah.
So I knew I wanted to work with people, and I enjoyed working with people. I felt, you know, that was something like, it's kind of giving back. I like caring about that sort of thing. And then I wanted to work in something scientific. So it was either chemistry, biology. That was where I was at.
Was that what you're excelling at school?
Yeah. So those are my things. So it was chemistry, biology. And I think for me, I remember a teacher of mine saying to me, you know, Martin, you could study medicine because it's hard, and I don't know if you've got the discipline for it. He said he's not.
Wow.
He was obvious, and I actually like him. You know, shout out to Mr. Turner. He's still in touch with him actually recently, when I was trying to, I still am trying to develop something. And I went and had a little talk with him about the chemistry side of stuff. But he was honest with me, and it was he's like, it's not that you haven't got the brains for it. Discipline wise, I'm not sure if that's really what you really want to be at, or where you want to go. So, and I think he sort of did me a favor in a weird way, because really and truly, when I met my friend's dad, and he was an osteopath, and I was like, what is that? What's that about? This is what he does. And I just basically understood that he was his own boss. He worked with people. He could make change, and there was challenge to it.
Right.
And I just was like, that sounds right up my street. And it combines biology and it combines learning. And I was like, this is good. And it's, you know, it's 4 years instead of seven. So I was like, this could be it. This could work for me. And I need, me personally, knowing myself, I needed to be something when I finished.
Right.
I couldn't have a degree in, say, history or French or English or something like, because that would require me to take it and then make it into something else. And I know what I'm like. I need to be on a track.
Really singular.
Yeah. So I knew that I'd leave and that's what I have to do.
Okay. I actually get that. And from Cranbrook, you went on to university to study this specific degree. I mean, is it a specific degree? So what's it called? What's the degree?
Well, it used to be a Bachelor's of Science, but they decided to make it their own thing and call it a Bachelor of Osteopathy. So you can be OST if you want, just to basically be a bit more quirky and cliquey, I guess. I don't know, just to make it seem like its own thing.
And in regards to subject matters that you must know, so you said sciences.
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna need the sciences because the first year is just basically all anatomy. So you're going to have a good knowledge of
biology
and sciences, maths, anything after that. You could be something like English or history because you're going to have to do quite a bit of writing as well. So it doesn't really matter. As long as you have an interest in the scientific aspect of it, I think you'll...
Because, I mean, as you can see my angle, I'm just trying to figure out the route in.
I get it. As I said, if you have an interest, that if you don't have an interest in those things, there is an aspect of having like kind of like a summer school where they kind of give you a foundation aspect to anatomy and the rest of it. So you can, there are, you know, it's not just straightforward. You have to have these things, otherwise you're not getting in. There is a way.
And you must be qualified in order to be an osteopath, or can you just go to your friends and just crack back?
I've got time for you now, honestly.
Word of mouth. Yeah, you want to go to, Martin.
Just write Bios at the end of your name, you'd be laughing. You're qualified. So you finish your 4 years, you have your degree, then you join the governing body to be called an osteopath. You have to join the GOSC, the General Osteopathic Council. To be an actual osteopath, you can't just kind of go, I studied, I'm an osteopath. You have to have something called CPD, which is continual
personal development.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So you have to have that, which then allows you to continue to practice over and over again.
I know you personally, obviously. Yeah, yeah. And I think I've put a disclaimer out there, guys. I do know Martin very well. It has not been an easy... Relax. It hasn't been easy.
No, not at all.
Your journey hasn't been easy. It's really inspiring, actually.
That's kind of so.
I want to give you, I mean, this is an open mind, this is a conversation, but where do you want to take it? Because you had to repeat one of the years because of personal issues.
I did indeed, yeah.
Do you want to speak about that?
Oh, yeah, I mean, look, it's, I'm here with the man himself, Mr. Blackticulate. So we know why we're here. Do you know what I mean? It's for people who look like me, what are your hurdles? What are the situations you may face? What are things you may have to overcome? Understand that osteopathy is a great thing to be part of, but it's extremely, extremely white. Do you know what I mean? It's extremely rooted in that. So you will have to deal with that classic kind of lack of understanding and to some of the things that you may seem simple enough for you to understand, but for some reason you're singled out for certain things at certain times, which you feel like, I don't understand what the problem is. You know, I'd watch as some of my colleagues, and you know, I'm not going to mention any names, but some of my colleagues, for instance, things got a bit tough, out come a few tears, they're allowed to take their time or retake a situation or give them 5 minutes to recuperate. Whereas you're sitting there trying to do your best and you're seen as difficult or challenged. I mean, I'll give you an actual real life example, so something you can actually understand that's a, you know, straight to the point rather than me just airing my feelings. we had this exam. So you get two final exams, basically real life situations in terms of you have a patient and you
not see... Not a mannequin, an actual patient.
And the examiners look at how you deal with a patient, basically.
Right, gotcha.
So you have two of those. And anyway, some of the feedback I got, amongst other things, was that I looked aggressive.
Oh, wow.
So I was confused because, generally speaking, if you spoke to most of my patients, the last thing they would say is that I was aggressive. They'd say, you know, he's fun, he's relaxing, he has calming, you know, he's jovial. Like, do you know what I mean? And I make people feel at ease. I generally...
Yeah, you're very comedic. Well, like a clown.
It's kind of easy to say. Do you know what I mean?
I'm joking. Let's not derail by it.
Hey, listen, it's fine. It's fine. Do you know what I mean? All I need is a stage. I remember thinking to myself, I don't understand what was meant by I was aggressive. And, you know, you're trying to understand some of the feedback because some of these examiners were our tutors. Mm. So it was very much like, I don't understand what was it about me that was aggressive. And it was just, oh, the way you sit. And I was like, oh, yeah, must be. the way I sit with...
You sit.
And honestly, the funny thing is, you could be aggressive if I sat in an aggressive manner. But when you're holding effectively what's a clipboard, a pen, and you've got someone facing you and you're facing them and you're asking questions and you're making sure that these questions, because some of these are personal questions, you're making sure that you're trying to make sure that they don't feel sensitive about these things. You really can't look aggressive, not unless you really dislike what you're doing. You see what I mean? But yeah, but that's how it came across, apparently. I'm aggressive. So you start to realize these things and you start to understand that it's a bit of a club sometimes. You know, you're not, because, you know, being black and some of the things that people find interesting and funny, you don't, because culturally speaking, you're like, that's not really that funny to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of the times I would take myself away to see my friends in London or whatever, and I didn't realize that was perceived apparently as me not wanting to get on with people and the rest of it, which I found funny because other people did the same thing, but for some reason when it was me, it was taken personally. I'm used to it and I can manage it, and that's one of those things. But in that scenario, it's difficult because these guys hold the keys to your future.
Yeah.
And then what I realized is that, and I'm not joking, and I really mean this, when I basically played the game, and not played the game in terms of, you know, you just made everyone feel nice. You see what I mean? What I mean is that you've played the game of basically making other people feel important, and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, I'm staying for that conversation and I'm laughing with this joke I hate, and I'm doing all these things and making everyone feel like, oh yeah, guys, I'm part of you guys. The joke of the matter is everything was 10 times easier.
Right.
My marks would increase, and I'm not even playing. I would study, I could study less and get a better mark than if I studied more and was just going to university to work and study.
So if you're more quote-unquote culturally accepted, things would just so much easier.
Things would be easier. Things would be better. My grades would be better. My life in university would be fun.
You didn't have the best of times at BSO.
I had some good times, and just I wouldn't turn around and tell you it was the most fun.
But either way, you persevered and you got your degree.
Yeah, I persevered. And like you said, you know, the personal aspects where I had issues at home. To be frank, it's basically I was homeless because of an issue with my own parents and the family house being lost and the rest of it. And again, that's a cultural thing. You know, being the way I am, I wouldn't really want to run to my university and be like, hey, guys, this is what's happened. Do you see what I mean? I didn't think that was what I do. It's not what I do. It's not the way I've been raised. But I realized that to them, that's a thing where they expect that's just normal. Do you know what I mean? People could just air really important things.
Bring their personal stuff to school.
So I started having to do difficult things by basically putting my personal life out there with people who effectively are strangers to me. Do you see what I mean? So that was difficult. But obviously, and I'll argue that that did make things a little bit better for me because it puts things in place. People understand your situation. They can do something about it. So I guess for black people in general, I know sometimes we want to keep stuff to ourselves. But sometimes if you try to take it all on by yourself, then you can't expect people to help you if they don't know what the problem is.
That's exactly it. That we are culturally taught to be strong.
Yeah. And not to speak about your personal business too often. Yeah. Not to people you don't know. In my household, I blame my dad for that one. Where he used to be like, for instance, you know, someone called a phone, asked for Mr. Wilson. I'm there having to make up all sorts of stuff on the spot because I don't know if I'm supposed to
given
the information. I'm not who I'm. So as a kid, I'll never forget my dad literally, someone goes, oh, can I speak to Mr. Wilson? I was like, he's not in. And then person said, okay, fine. And then they call back and he said, yeah, your son said you weren't in. And then obviously from that, my dad was like, yeah, you're a stupid boy. Can you imagine you're giving it all? I got all of that. So I was like, I don't understand what I've done wrong. I really don't understand what I've done wrong. But then I started to learn. So that's, for me, I guess, growing up was a thing. Yeah. You don't give out information like that. It was personal. It's personal. People only need to know what they need to know. Do you see what I mean? Apart from your close friends and family. I would definitely say to all black people, if you're having troubles, it's better to open up and get some help. And even if you are annoyed by certain people knowing the rest of it, it's still a better situation than trying to do it all on your own. Do you know what I mean? And getting mad that you're not getting the recognition or getting the help or the leeway that you feel like you should have given the scenario you're in. You know?
No, I get that. So let's bring this back into the profession. You've now graduated.
Yeah.
You're not immediately an osteopath, even though you've applied to be part of the governing body and obviously CPD. Mm-hmm. What were you first doing the moment you graduated?
When you graduate, you know, when you graduate, I applied and you pretty much are an osteopath straight away. You can practice straight away. But I had no capital, so I couldn't set up a practice anywhere. as I said, like, you know what I mean, lost a family house. I was literally trying to rebuild from the bottom up. Do you know what I mean? So I just didn't have the ability to start the business the way I wanted it.
Right.
So in the meantime, I just started doing other things just for income's sake and for stability's sake.
You said something about starting a business the way you wanted to. Does everyone go as a freelance and work for themselves? Or
depends. So some people will work for another osteopath. You can easily work for another osteopath and they'll take a cut of any patients you see.
Right.
Gotcha. See what I mean? But for me, I think the way I wanted to do it, it was the kind of thing I wanted to start my own practice and be independent from the get-go. Plus,
and also the person that you sort of told you about the route, that's exactly one
that's
of
what
things.
Interested yeah. me. You see what I mean?
Like,
that's
he was his
exactly
own boss.
Exactly. That's what interested me. So that's what I wanted. I didn't really want to start working for anybody immediately. And given the experience I had at the BSO, I didn't really feel like, you know, if you've had a tutor and someone who's effectively been your boss and you haven't had a great experience in that manner, wasn't the first thing I wanted to do.
Right, yeah.
So then I just started working other jobs. And you know, they didn't tell you that about osteopathy, that basically when you leave, nobody knows who you are. Because you're hyped. When you qualify, you're hyped.
Yeah.
You're like, listen, I'm going to change the game. I'm sitting there like, listen, don't worry about me. Don't worry about me. The next thing you know, they're going to change this whole thing to Martinopathy. Trust me. When I'm done with this whole situation. Do you know what I mean?
This listen, guy's, yes!
That's how you feel. Do you know what I mean? When you get out there, everyone's like, who? Do you know what I mean? And everyone's like, I don't give a damn how good you think you are. Because word of mouth is literally how you really make your way in this industry. Mm. People have to recommend you.
Mm. So you're building up your capital?
So I was building up my capital, trying to get that going. By building my capital, please don't misunderstand. Like, I didn't want to come like, yeah, 100 grand, I'm in. It was just the ability to take loss, because your first few months are going to be pretty much lost months. You don't have the patient list. So therefore, you're going to be paying rent, having consumables, things coming out, but the money that you're generating probably won't be enough to start with.
Let's dissect that a little bit. So in terms of overhead or the capital you initially need post-graduating is you need to be able to pay for office space?
For a clinic space.
Clinic space, yeah. Right? Local to you or a reputable place?
Just depending on what you want to do, but yeah, okay. somewhere that people can get to.
Anything else you need?
Just to be able to afford the things that you need, the equipment that you need. So
what equipment?
You're going to need storage, you're going to need a table, you're going to need power, you're going to need...
Any table or specific?
A treatment table, okay, what I mean. So a treatment table. You can have a portable one if you want to start out. If you want to have the real professional look, you can get one that's going to stay there and has all the...
All the whistles.
The bells and whistles on it. So like I said, you're going to have that. And then all your consumables, stuff that you use day in, day out. So that's your creams, your papers and the rest of it. Possibly Wi-Fi, depending if you use a... electronic system and all these other things, but you might start with a paper system.
And I know it's a bit maybe childish to ask, but roughly what would you say the average cost?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
It depends. I'm not going to give a number because it's what you're asking
because
for.
Because what happens is people might then go, actually, I don't have that, so they won't.
No. It's as simple as this. Do your research. Look for places that will work for you, because it's to say an average number is it depends on how ambitious you are, how how crazy you want to be with it. You know, there's people who I know who tried to set up in central London, for instance, paying a crazy rent. But the fact is, if they had a few patients who were paying a lot more money, they can afford it. Do you see what I mean? So it's just about what you can afford.
Right, yeah.
To make it so.
Because, I mean, the angle of it is I tend to look at the typical route in, right, the education and resources needed, as well as equipment and, you know, things that could help further learn and always improve.
Yeah.
Especially if you're already in this profession where someone might be listening to you and going, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So that's why that was my answer.
No, I understand. I think the thing is, that I got the question I guess I can ask you is that it depends on what you're asking for. Because you're asking me now how to set up a private practice, that's one question. If you ask me how to get into sport, that's a completely different thing.
Yeah. Well, I want to know how you got into sports.
Yeah,
right?
that's the thing. So,
I was just curious because you're talking about capital in order for you to set up properly.
Yeah.
But so for me, my brain, because it's a conversation, Martin, right? So I'm like, all of a sudden, if I'm listening, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, what do I need?
Yeah, exactly.
And why for me, I guess it almost looked like I went off the path.
No.
I was like, oh, what do you need for that? But let's go back into it because we're getting into the GC, the nitty.
Well, then sport comes because I used to love playing sports, still love sport in general. What then happened was, and I had friends of mine who were trying to get me to get into sport.
Osteopath friends.
Yes. And so therefore, it was like one of those things where they were like, you know, you should. I know you'll like it. I said, look, give me a year or so because I need to set myself up that I'm not basically just struggling straight away when I start to do it. So basically spoke to a friend of mine who had a coach who was in need of a therapist. And
the sports coach.
Yeah, track and field. And he said, look, you guys could be a perfect fit. He's only down the road up in Lee Valley. So we met. And the thing is, they don't know me. No matter how good I think I am, they're not going to start forking out money because you say you want money. Plus, I want the opportunity. So you're in a situation where, cut a very long story short, I basically volunteered for the best part of a year and a bit.
Wow.
Because I could see the opportunity, but I understood that it was going to be difficult. What had to happen was the people I was working with had to make their breakthrough, and I had to meet other people along the way who were, if you like, more important than them, who would then be able to financially afford me. Do you see what I mean?
Right,
and so, like I said to anyone, if you're going to get into football, which is even more closed off, into rugby, all these other things, be prepared to volunteer for a bit. Not saying you do it forever, but if you really want it, you're going to have to volunteer to start with, because nobody, it's a very, very, very difficult thing in terms of people need to know who you are. You need to come recommended. If you don't come recommended, nobody's really interested in trying you out, because this is how they are. They're all very careful, cautious, and a bit superstitious sports people. So they're not going to do it.
But you fortunately had someone who worked in sports, but also had an opportunity where a sports coach was looking for a therapist.
Yeah, so that's how it began. And the challenges I faced there were different. I mean, one, the beauty of it is like that you're working in track and field, there's a lot of black people. So there's an understanding that challenge that I may normally have to deal with, I didn't have to deal with anymore because there was an ease of understanding between all of us. Do you see what I mean? Personalities, cultures. I mean, most of the kids I was working with were Nigerian or African backgrounds. So you get certain things. There's understandings that don't have to be explained. And it was easy in that sense to build rapport with people. So it's that kind of thing. But the challenges I faced were egos from other therapists, people working in British Athletics who didn't know who I was, but I was getting popular. So they wanted to know who I was. And I had people who were funded trying to work with me. So you suddenly face people who then go, you're a threat to me. And then it begins. Do you see what I mean? Then it begins. They want to get rid of you. And they will attack you, and they will, because people are fiercely protective over their jobs in these institutions, any sport, fiercely protective. So they will try to attack you and get rid of you or discredit you or whatever, but you just have to remain calm and keep doing what you're doing, and the opportunity will present itself. So that's what I did. I kept working. This is the funny part. Through the guys who were working for British Athletics who didn't want me there, through their constant complaining and constant attempts to get rid of me, my name made it all the way up to the chief medical officer. And then the chief medical officer was like, what's going on? Because these guys keep complaining about you. And I'd met him once at a competition and we had a little chat.
Did you know who he was at the time?
Kind of. I knew he was important, and that was it. But anyway, cut long story short, he said, look, do me a favor. With the guys that are funded for us, just report into me for the next 4 weeks, please. I'd appreciate it because I know you don't have to do it. Obviously, this for me was an opportunity. So I did. I reported into him for the next 4 weeks. He saw that I wasn't doing anything abnormal. There wasn't a problem. he then was like, why don't you come up to Loughborough, where they're based? And
Loughborough is where the Great British,
yeah, that's where the High Performance Centre for Athletics is based. Like, why don't you come to Loughborough and we'll trial you out with some guys? And he put me with some of the pretty much the best sprint group at the country at the time. It had like Adam Jamili, James Asalu, Asher Phillip, and he basically said, you know, work with them. I worked with them. Everybody was happy, coached, athletes, everyone was happy. And he was surprised that actually that they let me work with them. The athletes themselves had actually all let me treat all of them in the way that I did. And before I knew it, then he was literally like, do you want to come up again? All this time, he's telling me, I can't promise you that there'll be a job at the end of all of this, but if you keep doing what you're doing, then we'll see. Right. And I just saw the opportunity and I said, I'm going to continue going on this. And they were paying me for this, by the way.
They were.
Okay. Once by now, they started to pay me.
Right, gotcha.
But it was very much like, we can pay you, but we can let you go tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you have to understand, at this point, I'm giving up a lot of my clinic to do this because I'm going up to Loughborough from London. When I'm doing that, I can't be at my clinic. So again, it was about the opportunity. I saw what I wanted. I made a beeline for it and I was going to do it. And in the space of about 4 months, I went from an outsider to working with the best sprint group of the country to then making the first major championships with the European champs, I think it was, and making the medical team for that and working with the guys then. Even though I may have spent a year volunteering, going from a nobody to...
Within 4 months, yeah.
Do you see how quickly it can move? So I always say...
There's a lesson in that.
There's a massive lesson in that. I think...
Trust your timing is better. Capitalize on when the opportunity comes.
Exactly. You know, in terms of how things progressed on there, I'm not surprised that I was basically making a lot of headway because, like I said, culturally, a lot of these guys are black, athletes-wise. So there was an easy understanding. A lot of these therapists who I was working with were white. Do you see what I mean? Also, I was relatively young. You know, some athletes were older than me, in fact. So even the non-black, African-backgrounded or Caribbean-backgrounded kids still felt a connection with me because I was relevant. I understand what they were talking about, the jokes, all that kind of stuff. And it was one of those things where, because I was like that, people had an innate trust in me. But at the same time, I was also getting them the results, therapy-wise.
Yeah.
So I was able to kind of excel, which annoyed a lot of people. Very much annoyed a lot of people. Yeah. And then what I expected to happen started to happen. There was another guy there who's also black called James Davies. So the two of us, not by force, and that's what annoys me, not by force, but obviously I've known him. We went to the same university together, by the way. So he was an osteopath as well. But we hung out a lot more and we started to find ourselves forced into hanging out more and more because it suddenly became a bit of an us and them thing.
Right.
Which is a shame. And this is over the period of 3 years. To the point where we were at Rio Olympics, for instance, and I'm getting told by the chief medical officer not to hang around with James and him not to hang around with me. That you guys...
Because
it makes other people feel a certain way. And I sat there thinking, but do you not understand why we do this? We don't have anyone else we can trust because we've been made into an enemy, not because of anything we're doing, just because effectively of how well we're doing.
Yeah.
People don't give us the respect we deserve, which I know, as far as I'm concerned, comes from the fact that, as far as they're concerned, we shouldn't be where we are.
It's almost as if you should be grateful.
Exactly. Rather than proud and rather than strong in our positions. But then over the next 3 years, I've got to travel the world. I mean, the job itself is great for that. Work with incredible human beings doing incredible things. In the space of 3 years, I went to loads of Europe, the Caribbean, America, Africa, Asia. I went all over the shop and I'd learned a lot and I enjoyed it a lot, but by the time I got to Rio, it was very toxic by this point.
Rio was when again?
2016. So that was just about a year and a bit ago.
Yeah.
So it got very toxic by this point. It was a lot of politics, a lot of infighting. Whether people like it or not, there is a racial issue in amongst it. It's very much one of those things where 60% or 70% of the athletes are black, but it seems that 90% of the support staff and coaches are white.
Yeah.
And you start to ask yourself that question of why that is. And I think there's a problem there. There's a big, big problem there. And it allows for that institutionalized issues of race to come up and become an issue within itself.
It's going to be flippant to ask because I know there's not one singular answer, but what are the solutions to that?
That is a problem. And that's something the solution I came up with was to leave and do it myself. And that's the problem because it's an institutionalized issue. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. That won't be overcome overnight, for sure.
Exactly. I mean, we are getting more black people in positions of power, but it's slow and it's difficult. You look at the coaches even in British athletics and athletics in general. You had at one point three or four of them were employed, and now it's just down to one. And the joke of the matter is, one person is getting treated one way, and it definitely is one rule for one rule for another. You know, me and James would get scolded and reprimanded for tiny little things. You know, James made a joke once about one of his colleagues wearing trousers too high and was given a written warning for it. But whereas other therapists have done a lot worse, and it's known, and I'm not going to say it here, but it's known, a lot worse. Stuff that in any organization you get sacked for, but are still there. And in fact, some of them receive promotions from it. And you sit there going, how is it acceptable for one and the other? And it doesn't make any sense.
So one of your solutions was to create your own platform. And bring, hopefully, those from similar backgrounds who are also capable of doing a good job into the fold.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So I'm with you. I'm just very acutely aware of time. We barely have any other professions than entrepreneurs and creative and media industry. It's nice to have someone who's in the medical field, who's an osteopath specifically, teaching and sharing, you know, his journey and how we can do something similar. So if there's any more questions, we're definitely going to get him on round twos.
Yeah.
I guess the floor is yours. Is there anything that you think that we haven't discussed if they're trying to get into the industry? What's the best piece of advice, basically?
Okay. You've
given some gems.
Yeah, I hope so. But the path is there to work in elite sport if that's what you wish to do. It is difficult. It does require a desire to do it. It's not something you can kind of fall into, especially if you're a person of colour, I'll be honest with you. Having said that, I think things to remember would be get your degree. Don't panic. Once you've got your degree, if things aren't working out the way they're supposed to, these things sometimes take time. Be prepared to volunteer for a period of time, and however that may be, whether you have to work two or three jobs for that. But also understand that working for an organization and all these other things, it's great for your CV and great for your growth. But the one thing to always remember whilst I say all these things is to remember to know your worth, probably more than anything. One thing I could say that I know I've been guilty of over the last 8 years is undervaluing myself. Sometimes it's a bit of a symptom of Black people in general. I think we sometimes feel like we shouldn't rock the boat because we should just feel grateful for being where we are. But I think if we know our worth, you'll always be given what you're supposed to be given and never fear asking for what you deserve. Do you see what I mean? So that will help you to continue to rise to where you want to be. And it's the quickest way to where you want to be. When you hesitate, you're stalling your own progress.
Message! No, I appreciate that, Martin. And are there any resources that we haven't spoken about? Any websites, any like trade magazines or publications or things
that for osteopaths, or yeah, if you're ever interested in getting osteopathy therapy or treatment, you go on the General Osteopathic Council website. Everything is there, and that will literally take you to wherever you need to go, or the British School of Osteopathy website. If you're looking to study, again, you've got the British School of Osteopathy, the European School of Osteopathy, the London School of Osteopathy, the British Medical School of Osteopathy as well. And just do your research, find out these things. It's hopefully, you know, as I said, the council will start to do a better job of promoting osteopathy around the world and in this country as well. But for now, it's up to everyone just to kind of look at these things. But the best place to start is with the council.
Gotcha. And it's worthwhile.
Yeah.
Would you say it's worthwhile?
What, the profession? Or?
Yeah, the profession.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've loved, despite all the things I've told you, I love every day because I've literally, as I said to you, got to travel the world, work with amazing people. And even in my clinic, as people tell you, I love my patients and I love working with them and just seeing progress and changing their lives. People come in who can barely walk and are grateful for the fact that they can now do the things that they want and have a better quality of life. That for me is important. So I do enjoy that.
And the money?
Listen, I'll be frank about the money. The earning potential is limitless. And that's the best way to put it, because I'm fortunate to be in a position as we speak, hopefully, to be negotiating to work with some American sports. And I will literally be earning more money than I would probably earn in any other avenue of work that I would have gone into. On a standard situation, you can make, it all depends on how hard you want to work. You can make good money. In a normal clinic, charging £50 an hour. If you want to work your ass off and you're getting them in half an hour, you can still make good money. You can make 50, 60, 70K a year. If you're lucky enough to have more high profile clients, you can make hundreds, 100 grand, 120 grand. You know what I mean? If you get into elite sport and get high profile clients, then you can imagine how much money you can make. So
amazing. Okay, sir. So are you ready for the quick fire round?
Always, man. Never really been a one for quick fire, but you know.
So try and make your answers quick, though, and short. You know what I mean? I ain't trying to play around out here. Okay. So, you ready?
Yeah.
If you could do a TED Talk other than the profession that you're in, what would it be about?
Social justice, social change.
Social justice, social change.
And yeah.
And your last £5, what are you spending it on?
Bitcoin. Last £5, what am I spending on? Jeez. I don't know. Mario Kart, if I could get hold of it somewhere. Something fun like that. I don't know.
Cool. What's the one superpower you wouldn't want to have?
I wouldn't want to have invulnerability.
Interesting. We're on Black Articulate, which is Black Action Articulated. What's your favorite English word?
Oh, that's a random question. Favorite English word. Off the top of my head, I'd probably say something like onomatopoeic.
What does that even mean?
Oh, Jesus, guy. No, because it's when a word sounds like it's...
Like it's said.
Like, yeah, like bang.
Yeah.
Or clap, that kind of thing.
I'm with you.
I like that word because it's an interesting one.
Okay. And the second person that comes to mind when I say the word success?
Denzel Washington.
Who's the first?
I was trying to cram like three people in there. I didn't know who to really pick. Right now, actually, in my head, Elon Musk.
And the penultimate question before we do ask my listeners where they can find you on the World Wide Web and when they do what you'd like them to do, I want to ask you, how would you like to be remembered?
Someone who cared. Someone who was willing to put other people before himself in the hope that they would do the same.
Nice. And so, Martin, it's been a pleasure. But before we do let you go, how can we find you on the World Wide Web?
Best to find me on my new website, which is www.vertex1.co.uk. That's one, the number one, not spelt one o, not
can
spelt
you spell O-N. It entirely, the Vertex.
Yeah, V-E-R-T-E-X and the number one
.co.uk.
That's the easiest way to find me, or email me at vertex1clinic@gmail.com.
And when we do email you or find you online, what would you like us to do? Anything specific?
Ask questions. I suppose you can go onto my Instagram page again. It's the same thing, Vertex1. But ask questions or leave
reviews
and things like that. But yeah. that kind of thing, I don't really mind. I'm not really searching for anything in particular, but just I guess to get me out there to be as well known as I can be, so I can reach as many people as I can.
Amazing. Hey guys, we really appreciate you listening, and if you have any feedback whatsoever, please do leave it in the comment section below. Also, you can get all the information on the guests, the links and resources we speak about in the description below. There's plenty more videos in our archives in our video section, so do check that out. And last but not least, and this is really important, if you are somebody who can teach us how you do what it is you do, because Black Articulate is all about empowering and upskilling the community, then please get in touch, because we'd love to feature you too. Guys, you're the best. Hope you have a great day and see you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.